Shalom, welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Katz, Shlomo Ben Sara, Malka Bat Allegra, Helen Friedman, Dorit Bat Sara, and Shifra Bat Sara, and to elevating the souls of Lunita Adler, Daniel Nankin, Allegra Bat Rachel, Pesach Zeb Ben Chava, Harav Mir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Bari Hoffman, Dennis Shore, Ruven Hoffman, Robert Mitman, and Sipora Fegi Bat Liba. This may be one of the most important shows that we ever do, because this is a program where we warn about a tremendous danger that exists and that imperils the very survival of the Jewish people in Israel and of the United States and of Western civilization. And that is the Islamic nuclear threat. And we have another example this past week of how dangerous the situation is, how incredibly perilous the situation is when we look at the Arab-Muslim world today, the Arab world and the Muslim world in general. The explosion that took place in Beirut. Beirut is the capital of Lebanon, a nation of 6 million people with a Muslim majority and a Christian minority. And an explosion took place because they left a ship with explosive chemicals docked in the port in Beirut. For 7 years, they just left the ship there. Russians brought that ship in and left it with the chemicals there, and eventually it exploded and killed over 150 people and injured thousands of people and left between 200,000 and 300,000 Lebanese homeless, because it destroyed buildings and structures all over the capital of Lebanon. So hundreds of thousands of people are homeless because of this now. First of all, let's understand a little bit about the history of Lebanon, because we're speaking here about something that can affect the very survival of the United States, of Western civilization, and more importantly, of Israel and the Jewish people. Yes, more importantly, Israel and the Jewish people, because nothing is as important as God's people in the Middle East. That's what decides the destiny of the whole world. That's why God created the world. But, and you read your Bible, you clearly see that that is the message of the Bible over and over again. But anyway, just a little bit background on Lebanon. Lebanon was carved out, as were all of the Arab Muslim countries. They were all artificial countries created by the French and British colonialists. The French and the British carved artificial borders and created countries that never existed, that had no legitimacy, never existed. Syria, Iraq, Egypt, Lebanon, Libya, all these countries were artificially created. Even Egypt, which existed in ancient times, there is no relationship between modern-day Egypt and ancient Egypt. Ancient Egypt, Egyptian civilization has been gone for thousands of years. There's no relationship whatsoever. The Arab world is a world of tribes. Numerous competing murderous tribes, which are like gangs. And these tribes and gangs are what control sections of the Arab world. And in all of these countries, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Egypt, Libya, they're different tribes. People belong to different groups. There is no real Egyptian people or Syrian people or Lebanese people. It doesn't exist. And so Lebanon was carved out. This country was carved out on the northern border of the state of Israel by the French to be a safe haven for the Christians, because Lebanon at that time in the 1940s, when it was first created in the 1940s, Lebanon had a Christian majority. And because Christians cannot survive in Muslim countries or in the Muslim world, because the Muslims have a Nazi intolerance toward all non-Muslim infidels, they are taught to hate all non-Muslim infidels. Read your Quran. Yes, read the Quran and see what that insane book says. And look at what Mohammed did. Mohammed, the founder of Islam, exterminated all non-Muslims on the Arabian Peninsula, did not tolerate any non-Muslim presence on the Arabian Peninsula, exterminated Jews, Christians, animists, anyone who was not a Muslim, exterminated them, men, women, and children. And in some cases, would rape the women and then forcibly convert them and turn them into Muslim slaves. They did some of that too. But no non-Muslim presence was tolerated, and the Quran, when the Muslims are strong enough, does not tolerate non-Muslims living in their midst. And the Quran, the dream of the Quran, the dream of jihad, of holy war, is Dar al-Islam, is a world, a whole world that will be all Islamic, where no non-Muslims will live or exist, or will have the right to live or exist. That is what Islam dreams of, and that's the whole focus of the Quran. When they're not strong enough, they say that they will accept non-Muslim minorities temporarily living in their countries, and they have to pay dues, and they have to be live in a humiliated, persecuted, oppressed status, fourth class oppressed status, almost as slaves. That's the most they'll tolerate, and that's temporary. That's because the Muslims are not strong enough to impose a complete Islamic, their complete Islamic totalitarian will upon everybody. But when they are strong enough, all the non-Muslims have to go. Either have to be forcibly converted or have to be exterminated. That's what Muhammad did, and that's what Islam demands. And Muslims do really believe in Islam. They really believe. Now, Lebanon had a Christian majority. So it became, the French tried to turn it into an independent country in the 1940s, but they had a Muslim minority there, but they had a Christian majority. And it became a trading center for the whole Middle East. So it was called the Paris of the Middle East, because people who wanted to do trade, because Muslim, the backward primitive Muslim countries and Muslim societies, it's hard to do trade in Muslim countries. Very hard. I mean, you have to bribe people, you can't trust them. You know, there's a saying in Israel, you shake hands with an Arab, you have to count your fingers after you shake hands with an Arab. Or as my grandfather, a blessed memory, used to say, and he knows because he lived in Egypt. He's a Jew from Egypt. He said, you can't trust a Muslim who even when they're buried, dead and buried, you can't trust them until they're 40 years in the grave. If they're not dead and buried in the grave for at least 40 years, they're so treacherous, they'll stick their hand out with a knife from the grave and stab you. But because there was a Christian minority in Lebanon, and the Christians, by the way, the Lebanese Christians are also very immoral, slimy people who are drug dealers and did all the trafficking and all the terrible things that happened, and money laundering and all the terror. Those are the things they did in the Middle East that made them prosperous in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. But anyway, they're not Muslims. The majority were not Muslims, so they created this country, Lebanon, as a Christian. It was supposed to be a Christian safe haven. But the Muslim birth rate took over, and by the 1970s, the Muslims were already the majority in Lebanon, because the Muslims have more babies than Christians. Muslims have a lot of babies. And so the Christians became a minority, and Lebanon was no longer a Christian country, and it was certainly no longer a safe haven. And the PLO terrorists also moved into Lebanon, and the Syrian army moved into Lebanon in the 70s, and so there was a huge civil war that broke out in the 1970s. In 1975, a huge civil war started in Lebanon. As a result of that civil war, 300,000 Lebanese Arabs were slaughtered by their fellow Arabs. By the end of the war, the end of the civil war, 300,000 Arabs had been murdered by their fellow Arabs. A Holocaust. I mean, at that time, Lebanon only had a population of about 4 million people. 300,000 out of 4 million, that's quite, that's just mind-boggling. And the cruelty in the Civil War was unbelievable. You had dozens of different sects, Christians fighting other Christians, Muslims. The Christians, by the way, were as barbaric as the Muslims, because the Christians are part of the Arab culture, even though they're not Muslim, they're part of the Arab culture. And so you had Christians fighting Muslims, and Muslims fighting, and Christians fighting Christians, and Muslims fighting Muslims, and the Sunni fighting the Shia, and just, you name it. And you had hundreds and hundreds of ceasefires and agreements to stop the war, to stop hundreds of ceasefires, all of them violated, all of them trampled upon, and the fighting would break out again, showing how much you can trust signing an agreement with Arabs. Arabs know you can't trust another Arab. They know that. Muhammad, in the Quran, instructs the Muslims to sign treaties and then break them. That's what he did. That's what he did with the tribe Quraysh. He signed a treaty and promised peace, and 2 years later, when he was strong enough, broke the treaty and slaughtered all of the people that he signed the peace treaty with. Just 2 years later, he broke the treaty. This is what Muhammad teaches Muslims to do. And the Quran is so proud of the Prophet. Oh, he outsmarted them. He showed them. Yeah. That's the great religious morality that you get out of the Quran. To lie, to cheat, to be two-faced and duplicitous. Now, in the 1970s, again, there was a civil war. 300,000 Arabs are slaughtered by their fellow Arabs. A holocaust, in effect. A holocaust in Lebanon. Arabs slaughtering Arabs. And if this is what they do to each other, imagine what they would do to the hated infidels. If this is what they... Now, a lot of the 300,000 were Christian infidels, but at least there were Arabs who spoke Arabic. And you had Muslims slaughtering other Muslims. I mean, it was just unbelievable. We know when they do this in Lebanon, we know they're not joking when they promise to do this in Israel, in America, and in non-Muslim countries. We know they're not joking because we see in Lebanon what they've already done in their own country, to their own people. And in the 1980s, you had the Syrians, the Iranians, and the Russians come in and start to take over the country. And then you had eventually the Hezbollah terrorists. Hezbollah is a terrorist organization. Hezbollah is Arab, is an Arabic terrorist organization. It's a word in Arabic with the word Allah in it. And this Islamic Arab terrorist organization has in its charter a call for the extermination of all non-Muslim infidels. All non-Muslims. They specifically single out Jews for extermination. Why the Jews? Why this obsession with the Jews? The obsession with the Jews is because the Muslims are commanded to conquer the whole world. All of the world. Any country that is not Muslim is Dar al-Kharb, is the abode of the sword, or the abode of war. Any country that's Islamic is Dar al-Islam, the abode of Islam. The whole world has to be Dar al-Islam, has to be under the abode of Islam. That's what the Quran commands. And so, when you have little Israel, this Jewish, little Jewish country, in the middle of the Arab world, it's smack in the middle of the Arab world, smack in the middle of the Muslim world. A little Jewish country, because that's where the land of Israel is, and that's where the Jewish people come from, and that is their homeland, and that always was their homeland. Unfortunately, they're surrounded by evil, monstrous, cruel, barbaric, savage people. But that was always the homeland of the Jewish people, and that's where the Jews returned to after thousands of years in fulfillment of biblical prophecy. And God deliberately set that up, because God is going to prove that the Bible is right and the Quran is wrong, as God's going to prove the supremacy of Judaism over Islam through the victories of little Israel, through the fulfillment of biblical prophecy. But anyway, the fact that you have this tiny little Jewish country in the middle of the Muslim world, right in the middle of the Arab world, this is completely unacceptable to every Muslim. Completely unacceptable. I mean, the Muslims don't even accept the existence of the United States or Australia or countries that are so far away from the Islamic world. They don't accept that. They're supposed to conquer those countries too. They're supposed to conquer the North Pole for Allah. They'll certainly never accept the existence of a Jewish nation, of a tiny Jewish country in the middle of the Muslim world, in the middle of the Arab world. That they'll never accept. And a Jewish country that humiliated and defeated the Arab world so decisively in war after war. 1967, the whole Arab world, all Arab armies marched on Israel to destroy little Israel. Same thing in 1948 when Israel was first created. Marched on Israel, outnumbering the Jews 100-1. And in 1967, the Jews beat them in 6 days in the Six-Day War. In 6 days, Israel quadrupled in size. Israel beat the living daylights out of the whole Arab world. Hundreds of thousands of Egyptian soldiers were killed in the Sinai during the 1967 Six-Day War. Hundreds of thousands. Now, the Muslim world will never forgive and never forget this and never accept the existence of any Jew. They'll never accept the existence of the United States or Australia or France or England or any other non-Muslim country either. But they certainly will never accept Israel's existence, and Israel's is really on high on their hit list because the Israelis had the nerve to completely humiliate them and show what a joke they are and beat them when they outnumbered the Jews 100-1. I mean, this is completely considered to be the worst type of outrage in the Muslim world. That's why the Muslims are obsessed with Israel and the Jews. But anyway, during the Lebanon War, the cruelty and the barbarism that was exhibited during the Lebanon War. You know, you had hundreds of foreign correspondents wrote about this. You had hundreds of little boys, little Arab boys, who had pickle jars that their fathers gave them. And in the pickle jars were the male organs of the victims of their father. Their fathers would kill somebody and then cut off their organs, or maybe even while they were alive, cut off their organs, and then stick it in a pickle jar to commemorate what they did to their enemies. And the little boys would keep it and would run around with it like it's funny and it's something to commemorate. They'd run around with pickle jars with men's organs in them. This is what they teach their little boys. I mean, the cruelty. They took huge barrels and filled them with acid that burns the skin and burns people to the bone. And threw thousands of Christians in these tubs of acid. I mean, the things they did were, then the PLO participated, the PLO terrorists, whom Israel now has so-called peace with, they don't have peace with them, of course, they're murderous Nazi beasts. But the PLO terrorists, who get American tax dollars, by the way, every year, the PLO terrorists, they were heavy participants in this slaughter of the Christians. And so the cruelty was just unbelievable, the cruelty. Even war correspondents who had been in Vietnam and saw the cruelty of Vietnam and the Viet Cong and other wars where there was a lot of cruelty, they said this was cruelty like they had never seen anywhere. Just sadistic, barbarous cruelty and cowardice. I mean, cowardly cruelty. Because people that are that cruel and monstrous are almost always also cowards. Now, let's understand something. What happened in Lebanon was not an odd occurrence in the Muslim world. In Syria, we've seen recently the Syrian civil war. Again, all these tribes, all these different groups, the Alawites, which is the Assad dictatorship's Islamic sect, and they're more associated with the Shiites, but Syria has a Sunni majority, and so there's constant friction and constant fighting and constant. And in the end, what have we seen? In Syria, 1 million Syrian Muslims, and this is Syria, it's Muslims. It's all Muslims against Muslims. In Syria, or almost all Muslims, almost all. There are minorities there, but small minorities of non-Muslims. In Syria, 1 million Syrian Muslims were slaughtered in recent years, just the past 10 years. 1 million Syrian Muslims were slaughtered by their fellow Muslims. Millions of other Syrian Muslims were displaced, and many of them are in Europe and ran and fled the country because they would have been slaughtered. But 1 million Muslims were slaughtered by their fellow Muslims. A Holocaust in Syria. A Holocaust. And barbarism that is not any less cruel than the barbarism we witnessed during the Nazi Holocaust, for instance. In the Iran-Iraq War, over 2 million Muslims in the 1980s, over 2 million Muslims were slaughtered by their fellow Muslims, both sides, Iran and Iraq. Saddam Hussein's Iraq versus Ayatollah Khomeini's Iran. Over 2 million Muslims were slaughtered in that war. Khomeini sent six-year-old boys with Qurans in their hands charging into Iraqi artillery to get the Iraqis to use all their artillery up. So he sacrificed thousands and thousands of six-year-old Muslim boys, six- and seven-year-old Muslim boys. And their parents willingly sent them out to do it. This is the will of Allah, and there's nothing wrong with that. And plus, they get a little benefit from the government. They get a check from the government for it, so it's worth it. This is the cruelty, the mentality of the Muslims, and the cruelty in the Muslim world. It's unbelievable. And of course, in the Iran-Iraq War, we know that they used poison gas against each other. They slaughtered each other. Using every chemical warfare, poison gas, the worst type of things that you can imagine. The cruelest, most painful, barbaric type of mass murder. And we see in countries like Turkey, which amazingly is referred to as an ally of the United States, an ally. With friends like that, America really doesn't need any enemies. And Israel also regarded them as an ally, just insane, insane. And we warned about this for years, and Israelis would say, what are you, crazy? You don't realize how Turkey, and we travel to Turkey, and we do business with Turkey and everything. Now Turkey is openly anti-Israel and openly anti-American. Now they realize that, at least some people, at least, they no longer ridicule us when we used to warn about this, that Turkey can't be trusted, that Turkey's a Muslim Nazi country. But anyway... The Turks, they committed the first Holocaust of the 20th century. Hitler, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, when he prepared for his Holocaust against the Jews, in which he murdered over 6 million innocent Jewish men, women, and children in the worst crime in human history, Hitler justified it by saying, who remembers what the Turks did to the Armenians? We have nothing to worry about. The Turks murdered 2 million Armenian Christians. 2 million Armenian Christian men, women, and children. A Holocaust during World War I. They just slaughtered the Armenians. 2 million Armenians. It was a complete Holocaust. Pakistan slaughtered 3 million of their fellow Muslims, the Pakistani Muslim Nazis, slaughtered 3 million of their fellow Muslims in Bangladesh during the Civil War in 1971 there. 3 million Bengali Muslims were exterminated by the Pakistanis. Massive, massive graves and huge, unbelievable, huge massacres all over Bangladesh. At least 3 million, conservatively. The conservative estimate is 3 million Bengali Muslims were murdered in that war. And by the way, the Pakistanis now have nuclear arms. What a dangerous situation we have here. And the Saudi Arabians, they're the ones who financed Pakistan's nuclear arms development. And now the Saudis are trying to build their own nuclear weapons, God forbid. So we have a situation where the Muslim world has proven that they do want to perpetrate a nuclear holocaust against infidels and against other people. They've perpetrated holocausts already against their own brothers and sisters, against their own people. And again, if this is what they do to each other, imagine what they would do to the hated infidels if they had the chance. And believe me, their hatred and their envy, their burning envy of the infidel, is a hatred as fierce as you can possibly imagine. We've seen what envy can lead to. Remember, Hitler and the German Nazis... Hitler and the Nazis and even the white Nazis in the United States, They hate the blacks because they believe the blacks are inferior. And so they hate the blacks because of inferiority. And they hate the Jews. They would never admit this, but the real reason they hate the Jews is because they believe the Jews are superior. Deep down, they think the Jews are superior. They say, the Jews control the whole world, and they've always controlled the world, and they're always behind everything, and this tiny little people controls everything and controls the whole world? That's not a sign of inferiority. They call the Jews Untermenschen, the subhumans. But Untermenschen, controlling the whole world and controlling nations and winning... if the Jews really have this type of tremendous power, that's not a sign of inferiority at all. So that's why they hate the Jews. It's envy. But anyway, and of course, the talk about Jewish control of the world and everything is nonsense, but that's besides the point. It's besides the point. In spiritual matters, the Jewish influence on the world is unbelievable. The Jews, Christianity, is something that was created entirely by Jews. Entirely. All the original Christians, all the early Christians were Jews. They were Jewish traitors because they believed in a religion that's false and in a Messiah, Jesus, or Yeshua in Hebrew, who is false. And so they were traitors to the Jewish people. They believed in something that was completely false. But they were all born Jews. It came out of the Jewish people, this religion, unfortunately, called Christianity. It all came out of the Jewish people. And Islam. Muhammad got all of his stories and all of his thoughts and all the ideas that he got were from the Jews in Mecca and Medina. All of his distorted stories, which he completely distorted and mixed up in his mixed up brain because his head was boiling in the Arab sun for too long, in the desert sun for too long, but he mixed up all the stories, but he took stories from the Jewish Bible, from the Talmud. He also took some stories from the Christian Bible and mixed those up as well. But copied. Islam is just copying stories from other people, and then Muhammad putting his little crazy interpretation into all of this. Misinterpretation, always. But the fact is, the Jews have, Islam, Christianity, communism, Karl Marx's parents were Jewish and converted to Christianity, but they were Jewish. And so the Jewish influence on events in the world, whether it's communism or Islam or Christianity, is unbelievable. It is breathtaking. And today we see the breathtaking Jewish influence as well, for good and for bad. For good and for bad. Many times for bad. You have evil Jews who do evil things and good Jews who do good things. If not for the Jews, the world wouldn't exist, because God created the world to have a nation like Israel that would be a light unto the nations and a holy nation, a nation of priests, and Israel will fulfill that mission someday. The Jews will turn around and will fulfill that mission someday. That will yet come. That's what all the prophets in the Bible promise. But anyway, in the interim, we have just evil in the world today and darkness. And the Jews do rise to the top and are, it's unbelievable. Jewish achievement and Jewish accomplishment is unbelievable. No nation or people can even come close. And so that leads to tremendous envy. Instead of people asking themselves, well, what's the secret behind all of this? Which is what people should do, which would be the smart thing to do. What is the Jewish secret behind this? What have the Jews? Instead of doing that, they want to drag down people who achieve tremendous success in the world. But anyway, what do we have now? We have nuclear bomb programs that are progressing in a number of Muslim countries. And this is because of Iran. Iran's nuclear bomb program has created a nuclear arms race in the Muslim world that is very, very dangerous. You saw in Lebanon this explosion. Imagine if these were nuclear bombs. Imagine if all these Muslim countries had dozens of nuclear bombs sitting around like this. Imagine what that could lead to. And by the way, this is something that I don't think was deliberate. I think that this went off because of stupidity, negligence, laziness, and corruption. But what would happen? What would happen if they intentionally decided to share these nuclear bombs with terrorists like Hezbollah, for instance, control Lebanon now? The Hezbollah, it's a terrorist organization, and they control Lebanon. Imagine if they had nuclear bombs. They've already openly said what they would do. They've openly said they would use them against the infidels. And many other Muslim terrorist organizations have said the same thing, that they're openly trying to acquire nuclear bombs to use them against the infidels. What would happen if Muslim countries that sponsor terrorist organizations acquired dozens of nuclear bombs? What will happen? Iran is close to developing nuclear bombs, and the person most responsible for this, the criminal most responsible for this, is Bibi Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, this coward who over and over again made speeches about how Iran's nuclear bomb-making program is an existential threat to Israel. It is the greatest danger in all these speeches. And he's right that it is a tremendous existential threat to Israel. And he's made speeches for so many years about this. He's been prime minister. He easily could have gone in and destroyed the program militarily. The Israeli Air Force is capable of doing it. The Israelis just recently were setting off bombs all over Iran, right in their program, right in the... People said, wow, they have underground tunnels. You can't get to the underground tunnels. What do you mean you can't get to the underground tunnels? The Israelis set off bombs inside their tunnels. The Israelis found out every location that they said, but what about all their secret locations? You won't be able to get to all of them. You'll only be able to get to the ones that are known. What are you talking about? The Israelis, they released huge amounts of information. They know where every single one of their nuclear bomb-making facilities or any facility directly or indirectly associated with their nuclear program, they know where all of it is. And instead of destroying the program and crippling it and setting it back, you know, the explosion they did just one of their explosions set back the program at one of the facilities for at least a year or two. And that was nothing compared to what they're capable of doing. If they'd send in the Air Force and do internal explosions and external explosions, in one day, the Israelis could wipe out that program for at least 5 years. And more than that, really, because the Iranians don't have the money to rebuild. They had a lot of oil money and a lot of resources when they started this program and built this program up. It cost them hundreds of billions of dollars. They don't have money now to rebuild. They don't have the capability to do this anymore. And if they start to rebuild, the Israelis can destroy it again in 5 or 10 years. And so, the fact that Netanyahu allows this to go on and doesn't take action, especially when he has a president now, Donald Trump, who winks at him and gives him the green light to do what he wants in Iran, basically. I mean, now he has a chance to do this. I wouldn't care even if you had a hostile, Jew-hating president like Obama. Israel's survival is at stake. Israel should spit in Obama's face and say, go to hell. We're going to do what we need to do to prevent another Holocaust. We don't care what you think. That's what Israel should do, and should have done it when Obama was president. But Peepy Bibi, we call him Peepy, because he does Peepy in his pants every time there's pressure on him. Peepy, we know, is terrified of American presidents, and you're terrified. Now he doesn't even have that excuse. He has an American president who will let him do it, and he doesn't act. What a farce, what a coward, what a disgrace. You know, even Menachem Begin, who gave away the Sinai and did terrible things as prime minister, Menachem Begin in 1981 destroyed Iraq's nuclear bomb-making program. Menachem Begin sent in the Israeli Air Force and destroyed Iraq's nuclear bomb-making program. And the United States and the world and the New York Nazi Times and the media condemned Israel for it. Who cares? In another year, Saddam Hussein would have had nuclear bombs, and he already said that he intends to use the nuclear bombs to burn Israel, to burn all of Israel. Menachem Begin, unlike Bibi Netanyahu, sent in the Israeli Air Force to solve the problem, and the problem was solved. And yes, Saddam Hussein then started rebuilding, and by 1999, years later, he had a program again that was being heavily built up, but the United States then, under George Bush Sr., went in and destroyed the nuclear bomb-making program. And I'm not referring to George W. Bush with the that they said that Iraq was nuclear when it wasn't nuclear. I'm talking about in 1990 in the Persian Gulf War, they did have a very serious nuclear bomb-making program in the United States forces then with George Bush's father, not George W., George Bush's father. They did have a serious nuclear bomb-making program again, and this time the U.S. destroyed it. So Menachem Begin, Prime Minister of Israel, he ignored all, and Israel was not, Israel is much stronger now than it was in 1981. Bigger and stronger in every way. And Menachem Begin sent in the Israeli Air Force to get the job done. In 2006, even Ehud Olmert, a leftist prime minister of Israel, he sent in the Israeli Air Force to destroy Syria's nuclear bomb-making program. So other prime ministers have done these things. Not Bibi Netanyahu, not Pipi, this coward. He is leading Israel down the path, God forbid, to nuclear destruction, God forbid. Now, Israel will never be completely destroyed because the return of Israel this third time is eternal, but you could have a large portion of the Israeli population, God forbid, murdered in a nuclear attack, God forbid. I mean, terrible things could happen, God forbid. Horrible things could happen. And Bibi Netanyahu is responsible for this terrible danger. He is the person responsible. Now, Donald Trump is also responsible for endangering American lives and Israeli lives and the lives of a lot of people by not acting, because the U.S. Air Force can also do this. Donald Trump is so dumb. He thinks when people say destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program, that means invading Iran like the United States stupidly invaded Iraq. Now, the invasion of Iraq was very stupid. But nobody's speaking about that here. Donald Trump is so dumb, he doesn't even understand this. This is why we needed Ted Cruz as president. Ted Cruz understood the U.S. Air Force could go in several hours, the U.S. Air Force could destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program, completely destroy it, and set them back another 5 or 10 years at least. At least 5 years, maybe 10 or more, and probably longer than that I doubt that they'll have the money, the hundreds of billions of dollars you need to restart the program now because they're broke. That's what Ted Cruz was going to do. He promised to do that. He promised to start off his presidency by dealing with this issue once and for all. It would not have led to an invasion of Iran. The United States and the Middle East would have been in much better position, much stronger, much more secure now if that had been done. This is one of the reasons why we urge you, brain-dead Jews who voted for Trump, to vote for Cruz in the Republican primaries and to support Cruz. Anyway, we have a situation now where, because Iran is building nuclear bombs, in response to that, other Muslim countries like Turkey, like Egypt, like Saudi Arabia, like the United Arab Emirates are building nuclear bombs. The United Arab Emirates just this past week activated the Arab world's first nuclear reactor. They have a active nuclear reactor running now. And when you have nuclear reactors, of course, it's much easier to build nuclear bombs. We have warned about this. Rabbi Meir Kahana, of blessed memory, our great leader, Morenu v'Rabbeinu Harav Meir David Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik v'Kadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, may his memory be immortalized, may God avenge his blood, our great leader, Rabbi Kahana, warned about this decades ago. And we've been warning about this for decades, about the threat of Islamic nuclear holocaust and how we have to, whenever the Muslims are close to building anything nuclear, we got to go in there and take it out. And we've warned about this for decades, and it can be done. It is doable. If you just have leaders with just an ounce of sanity and an ounce of courage, it's doable. But we have leaders without an ounce of sanity and without an ounce of courage, and a people who are so stupid and so blind and so ignorant that where they're being led, God forbid, like sheep to the slaughter. Chas v'chalila, God forbid. May Hashem have mercy on us. May we be miraculously saved from this one way or another. But the lesson of Lebanon this week is a lesson that something has to be done to stop this development of Islamic nuclear weaponry, or God forbid, we could face a very, very horrific, nightmarish future. This is what we're trying. And by the way, this is one of the 6 Hebrew videos that we're publicizing. You know, we have an advertising campaign with our 6 Hebrew videos reaching the Jews of Israel with this message. And and tens of thousands of Jews every week are hearing it now. The past couple of weeks, our views have gone up again. I don't know why. Sometimes we get only 10,000 views a week in Israel for our advertising campaign, and sometimes we get over 20,000. I don't know why there's this variation, but it is. It is what it is. But we're reaching large numbers of Israeli Jews. When I say large numbers, it should be much more. I wish we were reaching millions every week, but at least we're reaching thousands. And we're bringing them a message of truth, and we're bringing them the warnings that have to be given to the Jewish people and to the world, but especially to the Jews of Israel. That's what JTF is doing, and that's what you're doing when you're part of JTF. You're helping us to bring this message to the Jews of Israel with our advertising campaign, because no one else is sounding the alarm like we are, with the facts and with information and with truth. And that's what we have to do. That's the job we have in this generation. And so let's work together as a team. When we work together as a team, we can change history. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.